Everything's working. It has been far too long since I pressed record on this thing. Going through the mental checklist. Is everything working? I think everything's working.
That's fine. We're going to be great.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first ever episode of Dev Dive, a conversational podcast. It is coming to you via indierift.com. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. We have completely rebranded Dual Screens into Indie Rift, and this is the very first episode of the rebranded Dual Screens podcast, which you have come to know and love. No different RSS feed, nothing. Everything's just going to be on the same thing, but it now makes more sense because now we are Dev Dive, a conversational podcast. This is where we're going to interview all kinds of developers across indie gaming, because here at Indie Rift, we are indies. The show is going to come to you each and every week on your podcast service of choice. And of course, on our home on youtube.com/@IndieRift. They change the way they do URLs, Andy. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
I had to fix that yesterday because it was being all weird. Andy, how are you?
Like, as much as things change, they just remain the same.
Mm. Yes.
I really miss doing this stupid shit with you.
Oh, yeah?
Talking to people. I was giddy, like, getting a doc together and, like, throwing in links and stuff and scheduling people and having an active calendar again.
Yeah.
It's fun. And you know what's happened since our last episode?
Tell me.
I have all of my teeth.
Wow. Very good. Very good. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a new show, new brand, new teeth. But old returning guest.
Yes.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. Lots new, but some, as you said, it all stays the same.
I'm screaming.
On this week's and the first ever Dev Dive, we welcome Mark Radosi, developer of Moonlight Pulse, a 2D Metroidvania game that takes place inside of a giant turtle. A big old turtle. Available on Steam and itch.io on April 26th, so just a few days from recording. Mark, how the hell are you?
Hey guys, I'm doing fine. It feels good to finally have this getting out there. It's done. I'm confident in it, and it just feels good. So I'm good.
We last spoke 11 plus months ago.
Yeah.
Tell us what this last 11 plus months has been like.
Ooh. Yeah, I could say a bunch of things happened. All right, so I guess the most notable thing was last time we spoke, I was working on Moonlight Pulse full-time at my company, Seafloor Games.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, I realized I can't actually do the self-employed lifestyle. So I actually went and got my old job back. So now I...
You sell out. You gave up.
Wait.
You gave up.
Didn't you quit that job to start this company to make this game?
Yeah, and then I went back.
Okay, so you know what? No, listen.
What was that conversation like?
Game dev isn't all about the glamour. It isn't all glamorous and all that stuff. So yeah, tell us how that went. Tell us what led to those decisions.
About survival.
Yeah. So well, first of all, it was financial. I had money saved up, but that was running out. So I wanted to have a stable income again. But I also just wasn't as happy doing this as I thought I would be. So because being an indie game developer, as you might know, is not just about developing the game. It's also about working with other people. It's about marketing. It's about promoting your game on social media. And it wasn't for me. I didn't enjoy it. I did not like the idea of having my livelihood dependent on like getting as much people to try and play the game as possible. And it's just like, at some point I'm just like, you know what? Do I really like this more than my previous desk job that paid me a stable income? Not really. So I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. So I went back, but I still went, made the game though. I had a lot less time to do it. These past few months have actually been kind of crazy. It was like, working then coming back and then working some more on the game. But it's, hey, it managed to get through somehow. And there you go.
And it's only been a year too. So like you did still do a ton of work in that year. That's kudos to you, man. Like it takes a lot of balls to leave your life and focus on the game. And we've spoken to plenty of devs that do that. But I feel like it takes a different shaped set of balls to admit that you maybe bit off more than you could chew and go back and kind of peel back a little bit with that. So kudos to you, man.
Yeah, thanks. And I think you're right about that. It was definitely a second tough decision to make. First was to leave, and second was to come back. But like, I it's weird, but like, I don't regret it either. It's like this was something that has been kind of gnawing at me my whole life. It's like, man, you gotta at least try to start a game company. This is like the best time to do it. You gotta at least like give it a shot. And then I did, and it's like I don't really feel like I need to go back to that lifestyle anymore. It's like I feel like I'm just it's like a weight off my shoulders. So it's good. Yeah.
I feel like I can scratch off my list of questions. What's your next project gonna be? But on that note, are you sort of done with this whole experiment? Are you gonna, is there a next idea you want to work on post Moonlight Pulse, or is it just you got your full-time job, your gig back, and you've tried this, you know what it involves, and maybe it's not entirely for
Oh,
you?
I always have game ideas. Like back, I mean, like I've been wanting to make games. I've been making games like for years, just in my spare time, just because I like doing that. I don't think I'm ever going to stop making games, because that's just what I like to do. But I think it'll be some time before I try to make like a commercial product that I sell for money. I think like over like the my little game dev career, I've always tried to like make the scope of the games bigger and bigger to try to like go bigger and better than what I did before. But now might be the first time where I actually go backwards. And it's like, let's try to make something a little smaller in scope now. Maybe, I don't know, just something that maybe isn't sold for money. I don't know, something like that.
Do you think it's at all possible that if this game does take off and it gains a following and it's able to actually, you know, fill the coffers and stuff like that, do you think it's maybe worth revisiting the studio lifestyle and maybe just be the boss and have other people do the promotion, other people do all that other work that kind of makes you wake up in the middle of the night sweaty?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't think the game's going to take off, to be honest. I'm just kind of fine with that too. I'm just like, yeah, there we go. Game's out. And that's really it.
That is an interesting take on this because, I mean, we've had our hands on it, and we were big believers in what we got our hands on last year at PAX, not this past PAX, but the PAX before that. So I mean, I think you're selling yourself too short, man. You
I don't
know?
know. I mean, like, there's a lot of indie Metroidvanias nowadays. I think like just this month, there have been several that came out were like really high quality. I think like there's like Biomorph and Biogun. I think Biogun actually even has like a really similar premise too. And like those games are great. Like I don't really see this being like something that people really like stick to or remember all that much. Or I think I hope people like remember, because I think there are some like cool, set pieces and ideas in the game that I do try to like be memorable and interesting. But like in the grand scheme of things, like I'm fine with it just being like, just kind of a neat curiosity that maybe people check out when there's nothing else to do or something. So like, yeah, I'm fine with
We gotta find you a good marketing person. That's
it.
the
Yeah,
question.
I see, this is why I wasn't good at marketing, right?
Like, eh, I made a game, eh.
It's a game. Play it, don't play it, whatever. I think that the Metroidvania like crowd, I think, looks for these games, these under the radar games anyway. And it's not always the prettiest looking or the most polished or the one that comes from like the pedigree that always does the best. Like sometimes they'll just gravitate towards something because there's a mechanic in the game that just speaks to them. You know, for Moonlight, it could be that swapping characters. That could just be something that, you know, clicks in somebody's mind, and all of a sudden you got this community built off of it. Tell us a little bit of, for those who don't know, I mean, this is kind of, we're already 10 minutes into the show and we haven't really even told people what the game is aside from being a Metroidvania that takes place inside of a giant turtle. But, and if you haven't listened to the previous show that we did with Mark, then you obviously don't know what the game's about. So Mark, why don't you tell us what the game is?
Sure. So, Moonlight Pulse, as you said before, it's a Metroidvania on a turtle. And the idea is that you play as up to four characters that you switch between at any time. And they all have different abilities. So, for example, you first start off with Silix, who's like a mole character. And he like gets up and personal with like really fast, high damage dealing claw attacks. But it's a very short range. So then you have another character, Laguna, who shoots water projectiles from a distance, but it's like a little weaker. So like based on the situation, you're going to be switching between the characters based on like the type of enemy that you're fighting. And they also have different abilities that you use in exploration as well. So Silix, you have the ability to like claw through certain doors, and he gets the ability to wall jump later. With Laguna, he's able to like hit things from a distance. He can also like dash and like put things in bubbles. So it's like you have these characters with like distinct abilities that like make them feel like different characters, like even from different games really. And you're mixing and matching them based on the situation, and you're just trying to like get through the world as best you can. The world itself is also fairly unique. Being a giant living creature, you're kind of go through places like its stomach, and you're going to its brain and stuff like that. You're also traversing in giant blood vessels, which are kind of like the game's like unique spin on fast travel, where it's like these vessels, they're like this complicated network of directions, and they only go one way. So you have to really plan out your route and make sure you defeat parasites that are like attached to them, because they can also block your path. So there's like a bit of like a situational awareness element to that as well. And the whole point of the game is that a bunch of parasites are attacking the turtle, and you're trying to, you know, clean it up. You're trying to make it healthy. You're trying to protect your home from the parasites.
And the turtle has zero awareness of what's happening inside of it. This whole struggle for its survival and its overall well-being. It's like, nope.
It's like
a fart in the wind.
It's like how we as humans don't really pay much mind to the stuff going on with our cells, like inside our body and stuff like that. There was actually an idea early on where like the turtle would become like aware of what was happening and would even like start to talk to the characters, but we thought that was stupid, so we just got rid of that.
Just leave interjection to be interjection. I don't need to be talking to my colon. No thanks, I'm good. However,
mine always talks to me.
If we actually had the ability though to like know what our cells are doing, That'd be pretty amazing. We would be able to cure disease and whatnot.
They're just screaming at me all day long.
It might be overwhelming. I think you've got like
stop
like
eating like shit.
Million or
put
billion.
Put the second bagel down.
It's being like, uh oh, what's going on here? They're multiplying. No, they're out of control.
Yeah.
So one of the things I actually wanted to touch on a little bit is, so you have the different areas of the turtle that you're going into, that you're exploring or whatever. Do you know, first two things, do the characters know that they are the guardians of like a turtle? And does the player know that they need, that they're like, oh, we're going to the brain now? Or is it more like esoteric?
Yes to both. Like the characters are very much aware that like, it's their role, their duty to like protect their home. Like they're called the curative agents. Like that's their little group name. This kind of like what they do, they kind of act like the protectors of their home and stuff. And as for the player, like you'll definitely recognize some of the landmarks, though I think a lot of it is more abstracted out. Like the lungs in particular, I don't really think it looks like actual lungs like at all. Actually, I don't really think any of the places really are not like scientifically accurate to how
Sure.
they actually look. It's definitely more of like just like kind of a unique surreal feeling to it. Because I feel like with a lot of these kinds of adventure games, it can be kind of hard to come up with a setting that you've never really been to before. Like everyone knows what the lava area looks like. Everyone knows how the ice world works. But like the in this game, you have like, oh, you're inside like an organ. You know, that's a little bit different. That's a little new.
And you would have to like avoid turning, let's say, the stomach area into just a reskinned lava area. Like, stomach acid is Bernie Bernie, and now we're making the Bernie Bernie level that everybody recognizes. Like, how did you balance that? How did you actually make the biomes unique?
So actually funny example you had there, because the stomach area is actually similar to a lava area based on
Okay.
like the turtle's anatomy. It does eat like like asteroids and planets and stuff, so the lava comes in. That's why the stomach has lava in it. I think the world like inside the stomach, like the you see like the background's kind of like pulsating in and out, which makes it resemble stomach a little bit more. There's a set piece where you have to like lower the lava level, which like the stomach lava level, which is kind of similar to that as well, by like defeating one of the parasites that's kind of clogging it. There's of course you also have the vessels that weave in and out of it to the adjacent areas as well. So I guess it's not like what game mechanics are in this stomach area that you wouldn't see anywhere else. I guess aside from the vessels, not really much, but it still kind of has this like unique flavor to it, I think.
What kind of boss fight awaits you in the stomach level?
In the stomach? Oh, I don't think there is a boss fight in the stomach, actually. I think there's like a boss fight in like every other area out there.
The stomach itself is the boss fight. That's just
That's true. The stomach's like the probably the most dangerous area in the game.
that's how life is, man. Whatever goes down there, it's a Royal Rumble.
My tummy just growled like 2 minutes
Oh,
ago.
oh.
Third slice of pizza for dinner. Good Lord.
I had chicken.
So I think, we may have touched on this before or in previous conversations, but it's not easy making a Metroidvania because again, there's just so many of them out there. Like I was doing a search, like over 100 came out last year alone. And
There's a lot.
there's a lot of really good ones out there too. How do you even begin to make yours stand out to feel different? Because there's just so much of it already. It's like an oversaturation.
Yeah, I mean like it's funny because like I think like if you looked at the indie gaming landscape like 10 or 20 years ago, like it like in gaming like there no one was making Metroidvanias, but like this was like people really liked Super Metroid and Castlevania stuff. They wanted more like that. So like that's where like indies kept in and like said like, hey, like this is how we're standing out by making Metroidvania. But now it's not really the case anymore because like every one of their mother makes Metroidvanias now. But like as far as making this game stand out, I think like again the vessel traversal was something I really wanted to do because I really like the aspect of kind of planning a route in Metroidvanias where like you look at the map and like say like, all right, I'm here, I need to get here, what's the best way to do that? And I think the one-way vessels really lend to that a lot. I also wanted to make the game seamless, which I'm kind of surprised most more developers like haven't done, like because I feel like having a seamless world is kind of like almost like a rite of passage when it comes to 3D game development, like having a world where there's no loading screens or anything. And it's like you don't really see that in 2D very often. So I thought I really wanted to do that because I thought that'd be an interesting challenge. And like I kind of thought more people would try that and no one did. And I think I start to know why, because like I don't think any player has ever commented on the fact the game's seamless. I feel like no one's even noticed. I'm just like, oh well. Well, maybe they feel deep down that it's a little different or something, because like it was like a significant amount of work to pull off.
I think that kind of situation you almost instantly take for granted.
You might, yeah.
Unless you are looking at a loading screen and then not looking at a loading screen, I don't think you really are thinking about that as much. But I think that is a testament to it working as well.
Yeah.
Like
If you don't notice it.
if the player is not being their attention isn't drawn to that, then you did it right. You did it the right way, where it is seamless. You don't want to see seams. You don't want to see that there is a moment. What are some of the challenges you had making that? Because like the way I'm picturing it is, oh, now we just have to render or load everything at once, but like just have the cone of rendering just be a little smaller and then like constantly move. How did you do that without any loading screens or stutter or anything like that?
So the it's a Unity project, and it's divided up. Each area is like divided up into scenes. That's kind of works, and you can load a bunch of scenes at the same time. So what I did was you have like the main scene that the character's in, and then I also loaded all the scenes that are adjacent to it. So when you move from one scene to another, like it's just kind of like these scenes are like defined by boxes, really. Like you start in one box and you move on to the other. When you move to that other box, every scene that's not adjacent anymore, that's unloaded, and all the scenes that are now adjacent are loaded in, and that's all going on off screen. So once I got the system for that, it actually worked fairly well. To my surprise, the biggest challenge was actually the camera. So I don't know if you've noticed, but like you ever notice in like 2D Sonic games, the camera's always focused on Sonic, like in like the center, but like the levels are so big that sometimes you can see like parts of the level that aren't really like part of what the actual challenge is, and like it's kind of makes the levels like might be a little difficult to navigate, just makes it look kind of awkward. But if you go into a Metroidvania, like pretty much any Metroidvania, where you have like it consists of corridors and like towers and like these other large areas that like really focus on where the camera like really focuses on what the player needs to see at all times. And I really like that aspect of it, but that's really difficult to do in a seamless world because you can't just like automatically snap the camera to the bounds of a level. So what I ended up doing was put in like a bunch of custom camera triggers and camera bounds all over the place. Like every single scene must have like four camera triggers at least to like make sure that you're always seeing exactly what you need to see at all times. It was a ton of work to do, and it's like the fact that no one really notices, I think, is actually a really good thing in that case, because it's like you don't want to notice the camera messing up. So it was difficult to like make sure everything just works just right and feels right. And some like the level design actually had to change too in order to like make the cameras work. Like it's kind of hard to explain right here, but like if you're at a part where you have to kind of move in from like in a corner, like if you're going like right and then you have to go down, it's like the cam if you don't have position the camera triggers just right, that it's gonna look really janky moving from one place to another. So you actually have to change the level design so you don't like accidentally move to like a certain trigger when you're not supposed to.
Like,
So
there's, I want to make sure I'm understanding this right. So when you're setting up the we're gonna call them rooms, we're getting into the nitty-gritty, but I'm trying to wrap my head around this because this stuff fascinates me. It's why we do these interviews. So you have these rooms, right? And they're technically next to each other. If the camera is panning to the edge where this next room should start, but you don't want to reveal what that room is. Right, until the player crosses through a threshold where the character will see what's in that room. So what are you doing with the camera there? Are you're setting up a boundary where it's just black screen for that, or are you moving the camera more left, let's say, so you're not quite revealing, you're just seeing the edge of the wall as opposed to that room?
It's like generally the camera has like modes where it's like it's bound to a certain box, but then when you hit a trigger, that bounding box now changes to like a different box, and the camera can now is now free to go into like different places
Hmm.
now. Again, it's kind of hard to explain right here, but
Game dev, man.
yeah,
Game dev. You know,
for sure.
it's the reason why it's hard. It's the reason why not everyone does it.
I'm gonna keep an eye on every game I play going forward in the Metroidvania. Like, is this a seamless game? Because now I can't, I feel like I can't unsee it.
Yeah, many aren't. And honestly, it's like it's not really that big a deal, like to having the seams. And like I actually started wondering this myself, is like, am I gonna notice when other Metroidvanias have seams and room transitions now? Like I recently just played the new Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, which is excellent, by the way. I highly recommend it. It was very fun. And that's a Metroidvania that is like, you know, has seams. It goes from one scene to another with like a fade to black. And it's like it's very quick, it's very fluid. You like don't really care. It's like, oh well. Yeah, but I guess it's something Moonlight Pulse does to make it stand out. I do feel like you do kind of appreciate the seamless world a bit more when you're like going through the blood vessels and you're going like in a really long route that takes you like all over the place and you do it without like cutting once. I think that looks cool.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, that is. See, now I think back to like Symphony of the Night with the loading hallways.
Oh yeah, you definitely notice those, that's for sure. Or with like
How we've come along such a long way from like those days. Now you can just, people try to hide it more, but you're just like, fuck it. I'm just gonna abandon that and just make this whole thing open and seamless and.
it's much more obvious in the 3D games, right? Like BioShock with the elevators of.
Oh yeah.
It's like, how big is this place? This elevator is like 45 minutes long. What's happening? Oh, there was another one that did that too.
Remember the ladder from Metal Gear Solid 3?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a 5-minute ladder climb. There was a
It's
whole ass
15
song
rungs, and it's
that
just
they
like,
put. It's like an unofficial boss fight of that game.
this is the ladder that never ends. Oh, Jeebus. Am I knocking over? I knocked over a book. It's all right. It happens. Indie Rift. We are indies. And the podcast is also an indie
So what are you
podcast.
doing to celebrate, Mark? Once
I'm going back to work.
clock in.
So interestingly, I actually hadn't considered celebrating until like I saw like some other game dev people like celebrating a release of their game, and I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of a big deal, isn't it? I guess I should celebrate. So what I'm doing is some of the local artists that I worked with, and I was like a composer, writer, and a friend who helped play test it. We're just getting like pizza and ice cream next week. Yeah,
Oh,
nothing big.
that's
And
adorable.
it's because they helped me. It's my treat. Well, it's actually on the company's tab, so I get like a bit of a tax deduction for that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, gotta. I still have the business. It's not like the business went away,
No.
so I gotta utilize that. But yeah, that's what we're doing for celebrate. Nothing too big. I've never been much of a big celebrate party person anyway, so there you go.
I think, go ahead, Andy.
How many copies have to sell to pay for all that pizza and ice cream? I will
Good
buy them right
question.
now. I will buy them right now.
I don't know, maybe like I maybe like 20 maybe.
Okay. That's doable.
That's doable.
That's doable.
Yeah.
You know how many pizza parties you're gonna have? So many. Dozens. Dozens of pizza parties.
I've yet to have one. This would be the first, but
Listen.
hey.
Dozens are in your future, okay?
I
Well,
just
maybe I think I'm actually Maybe I don't know. I haven't like super planned out the budget for this yet. I just kind of hope it's gonna be fine. I'm pretty sure that the copies will cover it. It'll be all
I love you, dude.
right.
Who are you? I just love this whole
Don't
like,
ever change.
yeah, I'm making a game. It could do well, it could not, it's fine. Or, oh yeah, I should celebrate a launch of a game that I worked many, many years on. I'm just gonna get some pizza and ice cream with the team. There's a casualness that it's giving me a little anxiety at this point because I feel like you're like the antithesis of every single dev we've spoken to, because it's always like, the crunch, the lead up, and then it's out there, and then it's all like,
Ride or die.
cheerleading and
Yeah.
the pom poms, and it's,
But
did this thing.
like the thing is like
You're
I
ride or
when I do
die.
game development, it's always because I liked doing it. That's just like I was trying to make like Flash games when I was in high school. I wasn't doing that to sell money. I was just doing it because I like doing it. Like that's, and I still kind of have that same mentality. So like that's kind of, I guess that's kind of why the whole like doing it as a business thing like didn't totally gel with me. Because it's like, like all these things that make game development a business, like the marketing and the management and the people and the chasing trends and stuff. It's like, that's hard work. Like that's not something that I do game development for. But the thing is, it's like, I could do that, or I could work a desk job and make more money doing that, and I enjoy about the same amount. So it's like I'd rather just take the stable higher income, like and then just leave game development to just a hobby thing. And I think that kind of balance just works best for me.
Now, have you thought of, as a side note, maybe having a publisher step in and take that piece off your lap?
Oh
So
yeah.
you're purely on the game dev side, you're not
Yeah, I
focusing on the marketing, the social media, all that other
Oh sure.
noise.
Oh yeah, I have like a, pitch deck all ready to go. I've sent it to a bunch of publishers like a few years ago, and it just they didn't bite. It's like I mean, I had a few that were interested, but the terms they wanted were just not worth it at all. So what ended up happening for the game I finished before, like back in 2019, VisionSoft Reset, I've released that game on Steam. And like a year or two later, a publisher actually came to me saying, "Hey, your game that you already finished, we'll make a console port of it and give you like 70% of the sales, and you don't even have to do anything, pretty much. How about that?" It's like, sure, go for it. Here you go. And that's and I'm kind of hoping like I'm going to get lucky with that again with Moonlight Pulse, but.
I hope so too, because I mean, you put a ton of work into this thing, and it looks gorgeous. I loved what I got my hands on last when we did play it, and I think you have something really special on your hands. And I think underselling it is, I get it, I get where you're at mentally and everything like that. But I think once people start getting their hands on this, I think they're gonna see it too. They're gonna really find something special.
Thank you. But yeah, I think Moonlight Pulse is a quality game. I think it's a game that people are gonna have fun with and enjoy because like it's polished. It's fun. It's got good level design. It's got good character moments and set pieces and gameplay and bosses and stuff. Like I think people are gonna have fun with it. It's not as like grandiose as like some of the other titles that are coming out, but I think it's pretty good for what it is, and it doesn't like try to be like this super crazy the last game you ever need to play kind of thing. And as far as
That's so
like publish,
unrealistic.
yeah, but like that's what people how people think about games now is like this is the only game you need to play for the rest of your life. Like you don't have to play anything else. Just play this and this giant 100-hour game plus subscription services DLC and stuff. And it's like I mean, some people like that. Like I have a lot of respect for games like Fortnite, and I honestly do because I think what Fortnite does is like really cool and crazy. But I feel like there's also a need for like kind of smaller experiences that you beat in like a weekend or something, because I think that's pretty cool too. And as far as like the publisher stuff goes, there's a much less risk to a publisher when the game is already finished and out and proven to be good. So it's like, that's why it's a lot more likely.
They don't have to spend the money on the actual development, finding new talent to help round out your team. Like, they don't, all they have to worry about is, oh, okay, let me either, you know, put it on a disc or like throw it on a, the PlayStation Network or Xbox or whatever. Just get that part out of the way. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's a very astute plan for you to have. If you have your day job where you don't need a publisher to pay you to develop the game, you just do your day job, take your time, get a finished product. You could self-publish on Steam fairly easily, but now you have this finished, polished product. Maybe somebody can benefit from helping with promoting that if they have control of publishing it on consoles, but you get that bump also for on that Steam, because now the game is just in front of more people. And, you know, I prefer playing my indie titles, my more bite-sized games. I prefer playing those on my PC or on my Steam Deck or something like that. You know, like, that's just not where I play those games. I play my, you know, big shooters or, you know, set piece games or like those bigger games. I play those on my console. That's great. They could live there. But, you know, if more people can get in front of the game, and, you know, if you get it in front of more people, it's only going to be beneficial to your success and what you do. Mm-hmm. And maybe it changes your attitude towards, oh, maybe I don't have to pull back. Maybe I can just take my time, spend 4 years making a thing that I really like. And then, you know, this whole thing could happen over again.
Never yeah. Know. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think I feel pretty similarly to that.
And hopefully your team also finds some success, because phenomenal. Like, the sound is beautiful. The soundtrack is great. I think the world is super interesting. The characters are really unique. I love the character designs. I love the flow of combat and everything like that. I think everybody that pitched in has done a phenomenal job and should reap those benefits. So hopefully we get some good news.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I'll relay that on to the team for sure.
And I just say, yeah, I just want to say, like, what a massive glow up, because I went back and I played Vision Soft Reset after our last interview. Ooh. And like, it's like a night and day situation with what that game looks like, plays like, and this is, you've learned and growed so much. Growed? Between those two. Growed, that's a word.
Growed,
you growed so much.
What are you my daughter? She's six.
Yeah, that's very kind, thank you. Moonlight Pulse was like a huge design goal of the game, was really just to like kind of fix the shortcomings of Vision Soft Reset and like improve the things that already was doing well, and I think it actually did that. I think I succeeded in that goal, so I'm happy that other people think so too.
Yeah, absolutely. I played that, and I played an Untitled Story too. That was the other game you mentioned.
Oh really? Oh, that's
which
cool.
I was like, that's a parallel journey, because that game, that dev went on to make Celeste, and mm-hmm. that's a huge improvement. And those two, one's like Microsoft Paint, and mm-hmm. the other is like peak pixel art.
For sure. Yeah.
But yeah, that game, I want to think, because that's a cute little game. It's got a great little soundtrack, fun little gameplay loop, punishing platforming. So I thank you for making that ruin my life for a couple of weeks.
But yeah. Glad you checked out and enjoyed it. I actually forgot I mentioned that game, but yeah, An Untold Story, one of my personal favorites, so glad to spread the word about it.
Awesome. All right, it is now time to get into our favorite past segment that we are bringing to Dev Dive, which of course is our rapid fire section. This thing has the tendency to go completely off the rails as quickly as possible. So, but I'm going to try and focus us a little bit, Andy. We're going to focus today. Okay. All right.
Sure.
Mark.
I'm just afraid we'll ask them the same questions we asked him last time.
I'm not going to ask any question that I've ever asked ever. Ooh. They're all new in my head. That's it. All new. 100% new. It's a new brand. It's a new show. New questions. Mark, what is the best cheese in a grilled cheese sandwich?
I don't know about grilled cheese in particular. I actually don't have grilled cheese as much as I should because they're really good. But when you said just favorite best cheese, immediately Pepper Jack came to mind. I just like Pepper Jack.
Oh, Pepper Jack grilled cheese would be real good.
That sounds good. I don't
Real
think I've
good.
tried it, but now I want to try it.
Indeed. Andreas.
When you make a grilled cheese, do you prefer to use what's best, butter or mayonnaise?
Oh, butter for sure. Mayonnaise, I honestly don't like mayonnaise unless
Yeah.
it's like got like unless it's like Chipotle aioli or something, and like mayonnaise is like
A
no, it's done.
mayonnaise-based condiment. Yeah,
Yeah,
I get you.
mayonnaise by itself, no way.
But they say mayo is better for the grilled cheese. It doesn't burn
Well,
as easily
they
as butter
are
does.
wrong.
It's low and slow is the key to a good grilled cheese. Low and slow. All right.
Okay.
You got a nice batch of French fries. What
What's up with
is
the food?
I'm on food right now. I'll move
Because
away from food. Don't
because
worry.
the stomach level
No,
we were talking
these
about
are good
before.
questions. I like food
You got your
questions.
basket of French fries, okay?
Yep.
What is best condiment to dip in?
Oh, I was probably just gonna say ketchup. I'm sure I know it's just boring, but like that was like the first thing that came to mind. I'm trying to think of anything else that goes with French fries. I remember like there's this restaurant I went to a while ago that had like Parmesan cheese on the fries. That was pretty good. But as for like actual condiments, like I don't really know. Ketchup is just fine, I guess. I know some people like to put like gravy on it, but I've never been a fan of that.
Disco fries, yeah. Disco fries.
Poutine.
Poutine,
Yeah. My favorite, I know it's not my rapid fire, but I wanted to say it so that you could try it. A little sour cream. Put a little cup of sour cream, just
Interesting.
dip your papas fritas in sour cream. It's delightful. All right, Andy, your question.
Never thought of
So it's not about food,
Thank God. Whew.
but it's kind of food adjacent because
Oh,
it
okay.
involves you being eaten.
Interesting. Okay.
Hear me out. If Kirby swallowed you,
Oh.
what ability would he get?
I don't know.
Definitely
Let's
not
see.
optimism.
But
I want like a dark, like alcoholism.
no, I don't know.
Crippling depression.
I don't know. I mean, I do programming stuff. I know it's really lame, but like, I don't know. He'd like,
Would see the Matrix.
I guess, I don't know. He could like, he could make games. That's what Kirby, who swallowed me, would do. I know it's really lame, but I don't know.
It's rapid fire. It's what it's about. It's about what's up here,
Yeah,
not
it's
what's
just
in
first thing
there.
that
It's what's up
it's
here.
first thing that's coming to mind. That's what we're working with here.
Absolutely. You have been brought to the gladiator arena. You've been brought, and there's a rack of weapons. You got your sword. You got your mace. You got your flail. You got your axe. I don't think I said axe. Maybe I did. You got your warhammer. What is your weapon of choice going into battle?
Can I dual wield? Oh,
If
sure,
you're
why not?
talented enough, why not?
Hell yeah. I might go with just like I don't know. Could I take like two swords in? I really like those curved swords. I think they're called like scimitars or
Scimitar,
something.
yeah. Yeah, a little
Yeah.
scimitar. Okay.
Yeah.
Like
I
that.
don't think you actually said scimitar, but like, I don't
No,
know,
but
maybe
that's, hey,
like,
that's up there. Yeah, absolutely.
yeah, something like that.
I think it's all the Prince of Persia on your mind lately.
Yeah,
That
totally.
might be. Sargon had really cool
That's
weapons.
what's doing
He
it.
did.
Hell yeah.
There was actually I recently played another Ubisoft game, Assassin's Creed Mirage. He had like this like his weapon was so cool. It was like one sword, but the other was like a small dagger, and just like the asymmetrical dual wield he was doing was really cool to me. I don't know. Those games just have cool weapons.
Have
I like
like a
them.
little dagger here like this and the sword up here. Yeah, it's dope.
Yeah.
Andreas.
I'm going back to food.
Oh, okay.
We mentioned ice cream before. What is your ice cream topping of choice?
Ooh, I really like classic sundaes with like strawberries in them. Forgot what's it called? Like preservative strawberries or confection, something like that. Just like actually whatever. No. Just like actual real strawberries, just like mixed in with the ice cream. It's so good. That's
Oh,
my topping
like all
choice.
chopped up in there, not like just on top.
Not like
I
in
like
the
that. I mean,
weird
like,
like diabetes sugar slop that some of
yep.
those stores.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, yeah, just like real strawberries. Like, it doesn't have to be mixed in, just like on top too. Mm-hmm. I just like strawberries and I really like ice cream. So
hell yeah.
That's good.
This is a food question that isn't about the food.
Okay.
Mark's walking down a hallway. Mark slips on a banana peel. What instrument is used to make the sound of you falling?
Let's see. I don't know, like a trumpet or trombone or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, wah, one of the classics.
Wah. Yeah. Again, first thing that came to mind. I don't know what else it would be.
I think I would
maybe,
do violin.
Maybe a laugh track, like a laugh
okay.
track from off screen.
Okay, I love
like
that.
I like that. It's endearing. You know, it's a little, mm-hmm. you know.
Andy, yours would just be a bunch of crash cymbals. Just like, shh, yeah. shh, shh. There's nothing graceful about your falling.
I just get a round of applause. Instead of a laugh track. Like, get him!
What? Is it like when you drop your school tray at like school or something, everyone just starts clapping.
Everyone's claps, yeah.
In the cafeteria.
Way to go! Way to go!
Someone always yells Opa in the background too at some point. I feel like no matter where you are, someone breaks or falls or Opa!
All right, Andy, let's do one more from you and then we'll head out.
Are these questions rapid fire? As like, are you like reading off a script or are you just like making
them up?
No, we're making them up. If we were reading these, I would feel terrible.
Okay. I was like, I have to wonder. It's like,
these are not premeditated, friend.
All right. Gotcha.
I kind of want to tie it back to Metroidvanias. What's the worst one you've ever played ever in your entire life?
The worst Metroidvania.
The worst. Because I'm sure you've actually played with the best, but what's the worst?
Time for some spicy hot takes.
That's
okay. So actually nothing really comes to mind. But like I will say that like worst games lists are kind of weird to me because like you could probably go on to like itch.io and find like some guy's student project or something, and that game's probably going to be a lot worse than most games that people say are bad, you know.
Right.
So it's like it's kind of weird to say like what the worst one is, but like the worst Metroidvania I've played that I put like a significant amount of time into. Okay,
he's
I want to
say Hollow Knight.
I like Hollow Knight.
I'm joking.
I want to say Alwa's Awakening.
Oh shit! Former guest of the show.
Oh really? Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh. I'm explaining this. Okay.
No.
So yeah, there's Alwa's Awakening and its mm-hmm. sequel, Alwa's Legacy. Now yes. Alwa's Legacy is awesome. I really like it.
Agreed.
And it's a great puzzle game. It's really creative. I really like its skill tree and puzzles and everything. Alwa's Awakening feels like a busted prototype of that. It is so slow. It is so boring. I am like, this is bad. This is like your guy moves, or like little girl actually, is like slower than like Simon Belmont. And this isn't a linear game. It's a Metroidvania. We're going back and forth. It takes ages to get anywhere. And I was so bored. I was like, this is not it. This was not it. I really liked it.
I think that is fair. Next project.
Now,
we make Owl's Awakening.
We have asked you this question before because we ask it of all of our guests, but a lot can happen in 11 months, and I don't remember the answer to the first time we asked it.
Oh, we're still doing this shit?
It is tradition, Andy.
Oh my God.
It is tradition.
All right.
Mark, it's a simple question.
Go ahead.
It has two possible answers. None of which are my wife, which you could hear in the background talking to my son or daughter. The question is, Andy or Steve?
Andy or Steve?
That is right.
It's
a simple question.
I don't know. I don't remember what I chose last year.
The other one.
The other one. I think I'm going to have to go with Steve because I think his camera quality looks a little bit nicer than Andy's.
It does. It looks way nicer.
I got a couple of cameras
mine going. Looks I don't know what's going on with the light in the background that's making everything blown out, but whatever. But like yeah, Steve's looks very nice.
He looks very crystal clear.
Thank you. I win the best camera award for today. Mm-hmm. Andy.
Or like the lighting or the background. I don't know. It works.
I got you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at Indie Rift. That's right. We're at Indie Rift. That is the handle. Go find us everywhere. We're on the TikTok, all that stuff. We will announce our next week's guest over there on TikTok and on YouTube. It's going to go to everything. So follow us anywhere you're on social media. It would be really helpful. Again, you could go to youtube.com/@IndieRift to check out the show in video format or on your favorite podcast service of choice. Just search up Indie Rift. Also, you can go to indierift.com/Patreon because we have a brand new Patreon page about to launch. It's going to launch on May 1st, and it is going to have two simple tiers, and we're going to give you, you know, some bonus content every month, and we're going to keep it really simple. So we want to kind of start from scratch there with the launch of Indie Rift and all that stuff. So please feel free to go over there. Mark, where could everybody find Moonlight Pulse?
Moonlight Pulse, if you Google it, that should be good enough. You'll to find it on Steam and Itch and the Seafloor Games website. And you can also follow Seafloor Games on Twitter and YouTube.
Also,
I have to mention, because I have gotten this a lot over the past few years. It's Seafloor, like ocean floor. It's not C4 as in the explosive. Like ocean floor, CSEAFLOOR, Seafloor. It's not like C-4 grenade solid snake thing. No, it is. Oh, it's like ocean floor, Seafloor Games.
Yes.
I know someone's gonna.
We'll have it in the description. It's all over the thing, so you can just click a thing and you'll get there. Yep. Well, that's gonna bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. Thank you, Andy, as always, for flanking me on the episode. And thank you, listeners. And as always, please be excellent to each other.